podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
We've waved goodbye to the international break, Dele Alli style, and can now concentrate on the good stuff. The Premier League is back. We'll speak to the Daily Mirror's chief sports writer, Andy Dunn, on football's bad boys. Get the best bets in the Championship, League One and League Two with regulars Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross. And we'll also hear from Alex Dunn, who has the best bet on the continent this weekend as well. But first, the man who is a cast iron certainty to be backing Liverpool 3-1 this week. It's a good morning to Mr. Derek McGovern.
Yes, guilty as charged, my lord. 3-1 Liverpool. You won't find many better bets this season.
And joining myself, Dave Kellner, here in the studio, it's William Hill's head of in-play football trading, Andy Excel. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let's get stuck in then, chaps, because we've got a barn burner to start off this weekend. 12:30 Saturday, Man City versus Liverpool. Manchester City 17-20, the draw 11-4, Liverpool 3-1. Enhanced odds, both teams to score in the first half was 11-4. That's been enhanced to 3-1. Kevin De Bruyne to score and Man City to win was 13-5, enhanced to 3-1. Lots of hashtag your odds bets available on the William Hill website and on the app. This is a four means more match as well. What a way to start the weekend. Manchester City versus Liverpool. Liverpool 3-1, Derek McGovern.
Yes, they're the only enhanced odds you need to worry about for this fixture, 3-1. It's way too big. I mean, Guardiola against Liverpool, he just doesn't have any luck. Pep Guardiola, the City manager. In fact, I'm beginning to think he doesn't have any luck at all. Even when he went on a sabbatical a couple of years ago, it was wrecked by two visits from Fergie. The guy is not at home in English football right now. He's had to try and sort out that defence and was only given $200 million to do it with. My heart goes out to him. Liverpool, you can't judge what Liverpool do over the entire season. You have to judge what Liverpool do when the opposition is toughest. And what Liverpool do when the opposition is toughest is beat them. You look at what they did last season against the top six teams. It was incredible, absolutely incredible. I can't explain why. I don't think Jurgen Klopp can explain why. But you've got to take note of that. You can't ignore that. I think you can't judge them about what they do against a Leicester or a Palace. You judge them on what they do against the Cities and Uniteds, and they always beat them. And I'm gonna put everything I can borrow on Liverpool at 3-1 this weekend.
There's nothing left of your own, is there, Derek? 3-1 Liverpool, Derek's pick. Andy, almost every single week when we're in the studio, you've said, let's get one of these favourites beaten for these Akkers. But is this different? Because Liverpool's dismantling of Arsenal is still fresh in the memory. And you can set me straight here, but I'm guessing you're going to rack up bigger liabilities on Liverpool this week than Manchester City.
Yeah, I think that'll be the way it goes, because people will look at it and say, I can't pick between the two teams, I'll take the bigger price. And you know there's going to be goals in this. You know, the four or more, all the enhanced odds, it has all the danger signs for us in that regard. But, I share Derek's opinion. I do have a theory as to why Liverpool play better. They're a counter-attacking team. They're better on the counter-attack. When they have to break teams down who park the bus, they can't do it as well. But when they're given a good team and they can counter on them, that's when they're lethal.
Do you share Derek's opinion that Liverpool are too big at 3-1, in your personal opinion?
Possibly, marginally, but I'm more looking at a score draw, thinking that's where I'm going, 1-1-2, well, probably 2-2, somewhere in that area.
12-1 for the 2-2 draw. If you fancy both teams to score and the game to end All Square. That's available at 16-5 with William Hill. Stoke versus Manchester United is next. 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Stoke are 6-1. The draw 3-1. Manchester United 1-2. Again, we've got selected hashtag your odds and enhancements on the website. Manchester United to win both halves was 12-5. That's been enhanced to 11-4. And man of the moment, Marcus Rashford, for him to score and Manchester United to win was 17-10. That's been enhanced to 2-1. Manchester United still haven't conceded a goal in the Premier League this season. They've scored 10, got maximum points, obviously. But Stoke come into this with some optimism as well, Andy. They lost 1-0 away at Goodison on the opening weekend of the season, but they beat Arsenal at the Britannia and picked up a good point away at the Hawthorns a fortnight ago. How do you see this match?
My mum's from Stoke, and if Stoke don't win this, I'm not talking to them. I fancy them.
Do you?
I think they're a good price. Man United haven't won there in the last three. The all-time record is 13 wins Stoke, 12 draws, 14 wins United. Nothing in it. You've got to take the big price. I know United have got off to a good start to the season, but like I say, my opinion of them is they've been ruthlessly efficient and they've racked up scores at the end of the game. I think Stoke might be good enough to turn them over.
6-1, Stoke in the betting. If you're looking for goal scorers here, Romelu Lukaku is obviously an obvious one because he's got 16 in his last 18 Premier League appearances. There is an enhancement as well for Lukaku to score two or more. That was 7-2, enhanced to 5-1. And if you think Lukaku is going to be first on the score sheet, that's 13-5. You can see a tight one here, Derek.
Yeah, well, you can. I mean, in last season, that was United's MO. I mean, Marino made United so boring, you fell asleep halfway through their name last season. They started a bit more cavalier this time around. But they've beaten nobody yet, and this is a tough task for them. 6-1 Stoke, Andy's right, it's way too big. I don't understand it. United are being priced up and being talked about like the champions elect. This is a team that finished sixth last season, about almost 30 points behind Chelsea. And I don't think the signings of Romelu Lukaku, Nemanja Matic, and whoever else it was he bought, will make up that gap. I just don't see it. They've been massively overrated and massively talked up over three wins that they were odds on, I think, for in each case. They're odds on for this one, but they'll come a cropper. And Mark Hughes does put one over on United. Mm. You know, he's one of the few ex-United players, by the way, whose team's turning on against United. I'm thinking of the likes of Steve Bruce's teams who always go there and have their tummies tickled, but uses it as made cut from different cloth. And that win over Arsenal, there was a lot to like about that from Stoke the other week. Six to one is... It's just too big.
6-1 Stoke to win the game for both Derek and Andy. Derek, you'll be happy to know Robbie Savage landed a big Savaka last week. 37-1. I'm sure he's not going to mention it in this clip. Let's hear Robbie Savage's best bets for the weekend.
Hashtag Savaka. The Premier League Savaka is back after last week's international Savaka landed at 37-1. Can I follow it up? Here we go. Arsenal to beat Bournemouth, Spurs to beat Everton, Chelsea to beat Leicester, Manchester United to win at Stoke, and finally, Burnley to beat Crystal Palace. Hashtag Savaka on Twitter at William Hill.
There it is then, Robbie Savage's best bets for the Premier League this weekend. Let's move on to Sunday's games next. We start with Burnley versus Crystal Palace. Burnley 11-8 to win the match. The draw 21-10 with Crystal Palace at 11-5. Enhancements, Sam Vokes to score and Burnley to win was 23-10. That's been boosted to 3-1. If you think Burnley are going to score in both halves, that was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 4-1. And Derek, there's word going round that if Crystal Palace lose this game, they'll get rid of Frank de Boer after just four Premier League games in charge. That strikes me as madness. And surely whoever's hired him is also culpable. But you never hear about that, do you, Derek? You only hear about the manager, not the guy that's put the manager in charge.
True. But the managers always get a fat payoff, so I don't get too bothered about that. I'm getting excited because there are only three more Crystal Palace managers until Christmas. It's, you know, really time to get... De Boer has been a colossal mistake by the looks of it. Half of Palace fans are fed up with Frank De Boer. and say his brother would be better. The other half say his sister would be better. That's how bad they've been. They performed woefully in matches they should have won. They were favourites for, I think, a couple of them. And how bad are Palace? Well, Mamadou Sakho improved them massively last season. That gives you some idea. I always say that when Palace... In the last few seasons, I've made a few bob back on Palace away from home at big prices. I'm not sure 11-5 qualifies as a big price, the current state they're in. I just don't see how De Boer is going to change things around there. And, you know, you say that it's madness to get rid of a manager so quickly. I'm not so sure. You know, years ago, I might have subscribed to that view. But if it becomes clear early on that the players don't rate the manager, they're not doing it for him, which is possible in this case, I think you have to get rid early. Give yourself time to right the ship. What am I saying? Am I saying that Burnley good things are 11-8? Well, last season they ran riot. Like my kids, they run riot at home, Burnley. And if you get that kind of form against a team that looked there for the taking, then yeah, I'd say Burnley are 11-8 a good bet.
Sean Dyche won't be able to believe how well the season started, Andy. I mean, they've picked up 4 points, but they've played Chelsea, West Brom and Spurs, which is obviously a good return. And as Derek mentioned there, home record last season kept their heads above water.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Dyche. I'm constantly reminded he's the Ginger Mourinho by my deputy. But yeah, I mean, the two games between these two teams at Turf Moor surprised me when I looked this up. 3-2 and 2-3.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that, would you?
You'd think there's no goals in this, but then you look at that and you think, well, hold on, they actually match up to lead to that. So I'm with Derek. I think the prices for the match are about right. Burnley a favourite because they're at home. That's about it. But I think there might be goals because I don't think either's brilliant defensively. So Burnley scoring both halves, you mentioned the enhancement, that looks all right. Over 3.5 goals in the game, 7-2, that looks all right. So I'd rather go with something like that and try and pick a winner here because Palace are one of the teams this week, there's a few around that they've got to show a response for a manager. Dare I say Arsenal are one. West Ham would be another, which we might come on to. But, you know, there's a few games like that. And if there's no response from the players this week, I'm with Derek. You just get rid early.
It's heavily weighted to the under as far as the goals is concerned as well. Under 2.5 goals is 8-15. You can get over 2.5 at 11-8, which looks attractive.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Swansea versus Newcastle next. 13th and 14th in the league, respectively, these two. And Swansea 11-8 to win the game. The draw 21-10 with Newcastle 11-5. Enhanced odds, Wilfred Bonny to score and Swansea to win was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And if you fancy Josselu to score and Newcastle to win, that was 15-4. That's been enhanced to 5-1. One man that has been a factor for Swansea this season but could have easily ended up at Newcastle is Tammy Abraham. He could be a mug bet to score any time at 11-8 here. He's actually got 24 league goals since the start of 2016-2017. Highest scoring player under the age of 21 in the top four tiers over this period. So Tammy Abraham would be my recommendation here. Maybe have a look at him at 11-8. What about you, Andy?
Well, with my value hunter head on, I immediately thought when Bonny's got signed there, I wouldn't fancy. He's probably got as much chance of scoring this week as Wayne Rooney. I immediately started looking at other people, and Abraham was one of them. Jordan Ayew, you know, because I think Swansea will win this to nil.
Do you?
Newcastle away from home, I just don't fancy at the moment. I don't think the players are switched on. I'm not sure Rafa's going to get them going away from home. I think you might get them going at home, but I just don't think they're bothered away from home. So Swansea to win to nil at 11-4 looks all right to me.
Derek, what are your thoughts?
Oh, God. I haven't got a clue.
I looked at this game and I thought, wow, if there's one that you could veto for the week, this would be it.
Yeah, I know. I think you already knew I didn't have a clue on this. The only thing I can say with any certainty won't be the winner is football, because it's not going to be a classic, is it? You just know that. Both sides struggling, really. I know Swansea had a good result most recently, but they haven't started the season flying. 11-8 is short. I can't be on them at that. I'm loath to back against Newcastle because of Rafa. I just think he's a miracle worker. I think if they are going to prosper this season in the Premier League, it will be their form at St James's Park, a bit like Burnley last season. That will be the difference for them. I don't see them picking up too many points on the road because they've just been looking down their squad, and It doesn't scream Premier League quality, does it? Rafa hasn't got any players in it that joining the transfer window. At the beginning of the season, I thought if you get a few players in August, they might, you know, I think they'll do okay because it's a poor league, the Premier League. But they haven't recruited well at all. You know what? I'm going to go for a 0-0 draw.
0-0 draw.
Yeah, it brings an old saying out. If they're playing in my back garden, they'll draw the curtains.
9-1. Yeah, 9-1 for the 0-0 draw. And if it ever turns out that Rafa Benitez has a Scouse stalker, Derek, I'm going to text you immediately just to make sure you're safe and okay. We finish with West Ham versus Huddersfield. This is the last televised game this weekend. 8 p.m. kickoff on Monday night. West Ham 17-20. The draw 5-2. Huddersfield 100-30. Enhanced odds: Javier Hernandez to score and West Ham to win was 7-4. That's been enhanced to 2-1. And Steve Mooney to score and Huddersfield to win was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 8-1. Derek, can you imagine backing West Ham at odds on at the moment?
No, it's a ridiculous price. Not only that, the price that because they're at home, but they're not really at home because they're about as comfortable at home as I am. It's not. It's, you know, the move to the London Stadium hasn't worked for them. The move to any stadium hasn't worked for them. They keep getting pounded. 17-20 qualifies as the worst price I've seen since 40 million for Oxlade Chamberlain. It's just ludicrous. Huddersfield, you can't knock what they've done. I haven't conceded a goal yet, have they? Did I read that right?
Not conceded. Seven points from possible nine so far.
Yeah, you can't. I can't see them conceding against West Ham. Either. 10-3 is a big price. It's not. You know, it's not up there with Liverpool at 3-1 to beat City because Liverpool, you can see, you know, could beat anybody on their day, and you can't say that about Huddersfield. But they can definitely beat West Ham on their day. In fact, they can probably beat them most days. I think 10-3 Huddersfield here for me.
Okay, 130 for Huddersfield to win the match. Wouldn't you lot, the traders up there, be tempted to dangle even money out there? Surely you'd want to get West Ham in the book here.
You might see that.
Yeah, before I think kick-off. You must do.
Market may take it there because, you know, you can't have any faith in West Ham. You just can't at the moment, I think. Bilic has a terrible record of after first season just everything disintegrating around his ears, and it seems to be happening again. One stat I did come up with here was West Ham conceded 8 penalties last year and they've already conceded another 2 this year, so that's 10 in the last 41 games. So who takes penalties for Huddersfield was what I was thinking. And it's not the lad from Pet Shop Boys, Chris Lowe, it's Chris Love. and you can get him to score any time at a flash price.
14-1.
Yeah. So he took the last penalty for them last year. Now, they haven't had one this season, so who knows who's taking them? I don't. But if he was the last penalty taker, that might be a one-off shot at that, because as soon as he takes a penalty, you're not going to get that price again. So that's one that I dug out of this particular debris of a fixture.
14-1, Chris Love to score at any time. By the way, this is only the second Premier League season that West Ham have started with 3 defeats. In the other, back in 2010-2011, they ended bottom of the league. This is their first, in inverted commas, home game, but that atmosphere could be toxic at the London Stadium as well.
There's a few around. I dare say it might be matched at the Emirates if Bournemouth get the first goal. Yeah, you wouldn't want to be around there if they go behind.
Just before we get the best bets in the rest of the non-televised Premier League games and the naps this week, let's get an update on last week's naps. So that was the update on last week's naps. Let's get the best bets from the rest of the Premier League matches this weekend, because we've got some really tasty fixtures. It's unusual for a Saturday afternoon 3 p.m. kickoff, but we've got Everton versus Spurs, which is a blockbuster, and Leicester versus Chelsea, which is very interesting as well. Just a quick line on Andy on those couple of games, because those really leap off the page, don't they?
Yeah, I mean the Everton one, I think, is potentially a cracking game, and I actually fancy Everton, and they are going to be my nap. There's the tip. But then sometimes my head gets involved, my heart gets involved in that as well when Tottenham are concerned. But I think Everton are a decent side and they'll be all right, particularly at home. And I just think getting Tottenham off the back of an international break as well is a good time to get them.
Yeah, Everton 5-2, the Knapp selection for Andy on this week's podcast. Derek, some tasty ties on Saturday.
Yeah, match of the day will be worth watching for once on a Saturday night. It's been unwatchable in a lot of last season on a Saturday, but that'll be a corker. I still can't get away from Liverpool, a 3-1 to win at City. Mm. I mean, I know we've talked about that length, but it's just too big. The way they're playing right now, I've got to be on that. I will put a word in also. I know I've been a severe critic of Watford, but Watford with a goal start at Southampton is 5-4. Southampton yet again. They've been overrated by the bookies. 4-6, Southampton, I wouldn't be backing them with your money.
You've stolen the words from my mouth, because Watford are my Knapp selection this week, Derek, at 9-2. I'm going the whole hog here. Yeah. I don't think there's much between them at the moment. Certainly not as much as the betting suggests. Watford won away at Bournemouth. There's a possibility they can win at St Mary's. So I like Watford at 9-2. Just a quick word just before we move on to the next section of the podcast, Andy, with you. Are, from a betting bookmaking perspective, Southampton the most overrated team in the Premier League?
It's a difficult one, because every year they finish higher than you'd expect them to. So the evidence says they're not. But if you went down their team, can you make a case for them? Probably not. They're a really difficult one to judge. Mm. But generally, they're our friend.
That treble this weekend, 76-1. Liverpool at 3-1, Everton at 5-2, and Watford at 9-2, the punt treble for this weekend. We're going to hear from Andy Dunn, the Daily Mirror's chief sports writer, in a few moments' time. But first, with his best bet on the continent this weekend, it's Alex Dunn.
Hi, listeners. Alex Dunn here with a European best bet this week. I'm going to turn my attention to Serie A. And a team that are in need of a win almost as much as us European Napsters are in need of a winning nap is Atalanta. They've had a pretty torrid start to the season. They can't really be blamed for that. They've played Roma and Napoli and lost them both. Their season starts now. They're playing Sassuolo on Sunday at 2 o'clock, and the home side are 8-13. Sassuolo are okay, nothing more than that. Atalanta were pretty good last year. They've got the scope to do well this year as well. They need to step up on what we've seen so far from them, but against considerably weaker opposition, Atalanta could take Sassuolo to the cleaners. I'll take the minus a goal at 6-4 as the best bet across Europe this weekend.
Now we move on to the FWA section of the podcast, and it's a delight to be joined on the line now by the Daily Mirror's chief sports writer, Andy Dunn. Good morning to you, Andy.
Morning, Dave.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
And Derek McGovern remains on the line with us as well. I want to start this conversation with talk about Dele Alli, who's been in the dominating the newspapers for the last couple of days anyway, after that gesture in the game against Slovakia on Tuesday night. Andy, what's your take on it? Is this a storm in a teacup, or is this a real issue with Alli and his behaviour?
Well, this particular incident, FIFA have obviously opened disciplinary proceedings, and they had no option, really, no option at all. I mean, it was funny in that press conference when obviously we were aware of what Dele Alli had done, asked Gareth Southgate about it, and he said, oh, he was talking, it was aimed at Kyle Walker. And it reminded me of that time, Dell will remember this, when Robbie Fowler scored against Everton and pretended to sniff the whitewash off the byline. And when we got into the press conference after, Gerard Houllier said, oh, no, you're mistaken. He was actually got that from Rigobert Song. It's a grass-eating ritual which he used when he was at Met. And you look at Gerard Houllier, what? And it was a bit like that. It was that moment then when he said, oh, no, he was doing it to Kyle Walker, his mate. Funny way of communicating with his mate. But the pictures actually probably show that unbelievably might have been the case. But the fact of the matter is the FIFA can't just ignore it. Because if they just ignore an abusive gesture and say, oh, that's okay, he was doing it to his teammate, then can you imagine everyone else doing it and then just saying, well, actually, I was only talking to me pal. So they have to open disciplinary proceedings. The result will probably be a fine rather than a ban. Mm. If you remember Lionel Messi, he got a 4-game ban initially for aiming abuse at an official, which got rescinded, and just the fine, I think it was 50,000 fine or something like that. And I imagine that's what I get. In terms of your original question, is it a broader issue? Well, yes, it is at the moment with Dele Alli. You know, it's maybe not just that, but the fact that, you know, we saw him get sent off in that Champions League game for Spurs last year. He is petulant. He does have a go at players. So, yeah, it's something that he has to... You know, it gets a bit tired when people say, oh, well, if he loses that edge, you know, if he loses that streak of nastiness in him, then maybe he'll lose his edge. I don't really buy into that. I think you can probably, you know, just because you might curb your behaviour doesn't mean that you're suddenly not going to be able to ping a pass 20 yards or score a goal or get in the end of a cross. So it is an issue. It's not. I don't think it's an unbelievably pressing issue, but it's one that England and Spurs, you know, will have to continue to monitor and address. And listen, don't forget, he is young. You forget just because he's played, you know, 100 games, including his time at Milton Keynes. You know, this is a guy who's played, you know, nigh on a couple of hundred games already, you know, and at the age of 21. Or it's, you know, so it's something that he'll probably mature.
And there's a difference, Derek, isn't there, between losing that edge, losing that nastiness that helps you play your best football and the sort of petulance that he showed?
Yeah, petulance is the right word for him. And I'm so glad Andy said, debunked that myth about, oh, he's got a bit of a devil inside him, take that away and he wouldn't be the same player. What a crock of Tom Tit that's always been. It's like a bank clerk who embezzles. Yeah, he's a bit of a crook, but take that away from him and he wouldn't be the same banker. It's utter nonsense. And it's what I blame Andy Gray for starting it. I do. Just as he started that elbowing nonsense, you have to raise your elbows to gain leverage. The only reason he said that was that he spent his career elbowing centre-half in the chops, so couldn't criticise it as a pundit. And it's, you know, that's currency now. You're supposed to raise your elbows to gain leverage. I played a million games of football, never once raised my elbows. Never won a header either, like, but that's by the by. Dele Alli is petulant. He reminds me of David Beckham in his younger days when if you tackled him, you'd scream and scream again. It's, you know, he's got to grow up. I think it is a bit of a storm in the teacup that's yesterday this week. I mean, but more, you know, a more pressing issue is some of those tackles he's putting when when he's seeing the red mist. I mean, there's more than just naughtiness there. You know, he does need to be taken in hand, definitely.
One of the things, and also the petulance, one of the things that he does is that he'll, when a guy will come in and tackle him, they'll both go off the pitch and he'll have a little stab at him then. And the fact of the matter is, it's okay saying, well, it's a bit of petulance, the devil in him. But the fact of the matter is the spotlight is always on referees more so than ever when you come to major finals. And it happens in tournament finals. The referees, it's their World Cup, don't forget, as well as the players' World Cup. And they don't want to get anything wrong. And they'll be the first to sort of crack down on him if that happens.
Moving on from Dele Alli, we want to talk bad boys here. Not so much bad boys, but those strikers that want away from their clubs and have almost been forced to return. Diego Costa not yet back at Chelsea, but Alexis Sanchez and Philip Coutinho are just going to have to get on with things for the time being at Arsenal and Liverpool, respectively. Derek, big Liverpool fan. Will the fans be on Philip Coutinho's back? Jurgen Klopp's urged the players to support him. What do you think the environment's going to be like for Coutinho in the forthcoming weeks?
It depends how well he plays. If he plays like he did last season, all will be hunky-dory. If he has a few nightmare games and doesn't, you know, not as prominent as he was, well, the fans will get on his back, and probably rightly so. I mean, I've got sympathy for Coutinho. If I played for Liverpool and Barcelona came calling, I'd want to go to Barcelona, especially see the weather we got here in Liverpool. It's a dream move for him, and why shouldn't he want to better himself? You know, I don't blame him for that. Where he slipped up, of course, or whether it's him or his agents, in saying that, you know, all this story that he wouldn't play for Liverpool again if he couldn't get his move. He's never come out and said that, so he would be justified in arguing that wasn't me. You know, I'd be misquoted or whatever, what all foreign footballers say. But I don't think he'll have a problem. The Liverpool fans love Coutinho. They know how valuable he is to the club. And if he plays like he did last season, it will all be forgotten in a matter of weeks. It's different for Sanchez because you can't see him getting back to his best. You know, he just doesn't want to be at Arsenal. Coutinho would take a leaf from the Luis Suarez book. You know, that when you look back at the way Luis Suarez performed in that final season at Liverpool, it's quite incredible, actually. This is a guy who knew he was going at the end of the season, and yet he was unbelievable. Coutinho should take a leaf out of that book. Sanchez, I think, is different. He was out of condition. One of his former managers said he was fat when he was on duty in Chile this week. And Arsenal, he influenced matches, and his current side, he influences the tide. That's how he doesn't look like a guy who wants to play football for Arsenal right now. I think Coutinho will be okay. I don't think Sanchez will be.
Okay. Andy, Chelsea with Diego Costa, that's an interesting one because There was a piece in one of the papers this week about Chelsea ordering his car to be removed from the club's training ground and delivered in dumped in a youth team bay. That'll teach him, won't it, Diego Costa? His £100,000 car being dumped in the U team.
I was going to say, he's clearly that desperate, that gutted, that hard up that he can just leave his 100-odd grand car in the car park. And hey, it reminds me, do you remember when I think it was Jermaine Pennant came back from his club in Spain and moved to, I can't remember what club was it? Stoke? I think it might have been Stoke.
Yeah, I think so.
And he drove his Porsche to the Spanish train station, got on the train, went to the airport, and just left it there, and that was it. Just left it there, never to return, like we all do. And you see what Del there mentioned about Alexis Sanchez fat. You know, I mean, if he's fat, I'm sucking my stomach in here. I mean, he looks terribly out of shape, doesn't he? The whole anyway. But Diego Costa, the thing is, it's the most bizarre thing. I don't understand how it can come to this. That a professional. You see, Del talked about Coutinho and about Sanchez. Now these are two guys I think who, you know, they are professional. They're all professionals. But I cannot see once they get back to training properly, once they get out in the pit, they'll do anything but give their all and do their best. What's Costa doing back there? I really, really do not know how it's come to this. All parties need to look at themselves, including Antonio Conte, who sent him that text message, and now Costa just hanging around there. How, you know, and if I was Roman Abramovich and investing all that money, I'd be thinking, hang on a minute, why have we got a player who's on our books, who's getting paid, albeit he's probably getting fined at the same time, in wherever he is, in Brazil or whatever he's doing. It's actually the International Hide and Seek Championships this weekend, and he could be in that. I mean, we just haven't seen him properly. So it's ridiculous, and especially when Chelsea cannot afford, really. They haven't got that many options up front. Alvaro Morata's hit the ground running, I think. I'm quite impressed by him. But apart from that, you know, Batshuayi, I don't know, hit and miss. So it's a situation that you... And also, don't forget, you cannot see how he's keeping match fit. So we assume that the only way out of this is that when Atletico Madrid's transfer ban comes to an end, they take him in January.
Just before you leave us, chaps, Derek, you've mentioned this before and you think it's a good idea to close the transfer window before the start of the season. Andy, we've not had you on the podcast on this topic before. Yes. It looks like this is going to go through now. 14 clubs voted in favour of this amendment. What's your view on it?
Well, I disagree with that. I don't understand why they've done it. I really do not understand the logic of it. For several reasons, really. One of which, of course, is that you can't, it's unilaterally, they've unilaterally imposed it. So basically they can, so the season, say, starts, I think it's on August the 10th next year. So from then, Premier League clubs can't sign players, but foreign clubs can buy players from the Premier League. So the, you know, the unsettling nature of it won't change. Foreign clubs will probably take their lead from the Premier League. That's what the Premier League are hoping. But even so, they're not going to bring the transfer window, their deadline forward to when the Premier League season starts. So La Liga, the Bundesliga, and Serie A all start later than the Premier League. So there will inevitably be a period, you cannot avoid it, there will be a period when clubs can come and buy players from Premier League clubs. So I don't think... You've got the January transfer window, so that's 4 weeks during the season when you can buy players. So at the moment, it's 7 weeks during the season. So the season starts on August the 11th. The transfer window closes on the 31st. Well, what difference does it make whether you have 7 weeks during the season to buy players or four? And to me, it doesn't make any difference. And you know what? You can always impose. Each individual club can have its own transfer window. It's just called saying no. You know, like Liverpool did to Barcelona, like Southampton did to Liverpool. That's your own transfer window. If you want to bring your deadline forward, bring it forward and just say to people, we're not selling, they're under contract.
Derek, that was your concern, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, I did say, you know, they should do it before the season started, but as long as it wasn't unilateral, as long as every country fell into line, this is neither here nor there, what they've done here. I can only see bad things ahead. If every country fell into line and said, right, it stops on August the 1st, What's wrong with that? I don't understand. Why would anybody possibly argue?
Thank you, chaps. We're going to hear from Pete Farries next on the Championship Football, and we'll move through the lower leagues as the podcast moves on.
It's amazing what can change in a few days of the transfer window. Before that, I'd seen Brentford play okay, but not really get anything from their games. After the transfer window, they've sold most of their best players, including Hutta, who is their main goalscorer, and their form now still reads, of course, no victories in the Championship this season. This weekend, they travel to Aston Villa, a side who themselves have not exactly covered themselves in glory, just the one victory and two draws for Steve Bruce's men so far, but they have at least shown a propensity to score at home, four past Norwich, four past Wigan in their two most recent home games. For me, Villa at even money are maybe not the best price in the world, but I am pretty convinced that Brentford, off the back of losing good players and having yet not picked up a win, are actually not particularly backable, which makes Villa absolutely and wholeheartedly backable. Quite a simple one for me this weekend. Aston Villa at even money to beat Brentford.
League One this season for me so far is a case of if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. And that's what I'm doing this weekend. And my nap selection is Charlton at 11-10 at home to Southend. Early this week, Charlton were evens. They've gone back out to odds against, and I'm taking them at home to a struggling Southend. Charlton are not just winning plenty, but scoring plenty as well. 4-1 at home to Northampton, 2-0 away at Rotherham, and 4-3 away at Oldham. So Charlton to win an over 2.5 goals at 21-10 is very much a play. In terms of goal scorers for Charlton, they've got plenty of them. McGuinness, Holmes, Forster, Caskey, Bauer, Fosu, Clark. So they've got goals all over the place. Southend conceding plenty. Southend have conceded 8 goals in their two previous away games. 5-0 defeat at Rotherham and 3-3 draw away at Gillingham. Southend 15th, Charlton 3rd. Come the end of play on Saturday, Charlton could be top of the table, and I'm taking Charlton, my nap selection, to beat Southend at 11-10. And now looking at League 2, here's Al Ross.
The vast majority of teams in League 2 this weekend are around 13-10 for the home side, 17-10 for the away side. It's just a quirk of the fixtures that means the traders give the same likelihood of success to most teams. One notable exception is Exeter, who are 13-10 at Forest Green, and they were going to be the nap until I spotted a team I've not really talked about this season, and that's Crewe. A poor season by their standards last year, but a good transfer window, including the free capture of Colchester's Chris Porter, who's got 3 goals already, has set them up for what I thought would be a much better season, and so it's proving. They lost at Grimsby last week, where they were on top until Connor Grant was knocked unconscious in a sickening collision early on and had to be stretched off. You can't really legislate for that kind of thing. And before that, it was 2 wins, 2 draws. They're at home, where they are still unbeaten this season, against the Chesterfield side, for whom only 2 wins and 11 points of their total of 39 in League One last season came on the road. An injury time win at also relegated Swindon in March remains their only away win of 2017. I know a lot of that was in League One, but still. 7 away goals between January and May in 11 competitive games, and this season that rot continues. They put out a full-strength side in the League Cup, so that is 3 competitive away games this season, losing 3, scoring twice, conceding 10, including 4 in a mauling at Newport the last time they were away. And if Crewe don't concede, they haven't failed to score at home since January. So 11-10 on the home side has to be this week's nap.
That's your lot for the Pump Podcast this week. Thank you to everyone that contributed, and of course, thank you to you, the listener, as well, for tuning in. You can check this podcast out via audioboom.com each and every week. Just type in The Punt with William Hill, and you can catch us on iTunes as well, and make sure this podcast is downloaded weekly. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com, and if you're having a bet in the Premier League this week, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.